We'll call the meeting Sussex County Council for September 27th to order. First thing is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker?
Yes, I would suggest that we strike approval of the minutes, and also under executive session, job applicants, strike job applicants' qualifications, personnel, and land acquisition.
So moved.
Have a motion and a second to adopt the amended agenda. Any questions on motion? Now we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Vote yes, motion carried. Mr. Moore, correspondence?
There is no correspondence, Mr. President.
Wow. Very good. Mr. Baker?
Yes, the first item on the agenda is employee recognition. And with us today, we have Mr. Greg Hill from our Building Code Department. Greg, if you wouldn't mind stepping up to the
plate.
Podium. Greg is retiring September 30th. He started with the county on May 1st, 1999 as a code enforcement officer one in our building code department. He was promoted September 2000 to code enforcement two, and then promoted September 2003 to code enforcement three. He's done an excellent job for the county. He's has 12 years of service, and he's taken advantage of the early retirement offer in the building code department. And we wish to congratulate Greg and thank him for his years of dedicated years of service to the county. And we do have a plaque to present, presented to Greg Hill by the Sussex County Council in grateful appreciation of 12 years of outstanding service and dedication. 1999 to 2011.
I only hope when I get to be Greg's age, I can retire. Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you.
Get your picture and smile over here. I want to get your best side up there.
Finally, Mike's met somebody as big as he is.
Yeah.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We also wanted to note that she couldn't be with us here this morning, but Bonnie Wooten from the Personnel Department is also retiring September 30. Bonnie started in September 1981 as a temporary clerk in the Treasury Division. She thereafter worked as a county operator when we had a telephone operator for a while, and utility billing as a clerk in 1985, and then a secretary for the summer youth program, and then in 1986 she was transferred to the personnel office, where she eventually was promoted to assistant personnel director in 2007, and she is leaving us with 30 years of service, and also is taking advantage of the early retirement offer. The next item of business we have is University of Delaware. We have the ARAG Extension Program, and Mr. Mark Isaacs from the University of Delaware is here today to explain the program.
Mm-hmm. Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I want to take this opportunity to thank the council for, on behalf of the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, and in particular on the Carville Research and Education Center, which is located right on Route 9 here in Georgetown, for your continued support of our extension and research programs. I know you all are aware of the challenges with the federal funding that we're dealing with. This year, we actually sustained a 15% budget cut in our state lines, which there's nine state lines that go to support the College of Agriculture. And support from you enables us to continue to work on program areas that are really specific to Sussex County. Every year I always like to remind the council that none of these monies go to Newark. You know, they don't go to main campus for anything. They stay right here to support our research and extension programs. The total amount that you've provided this year is $69,049. Supports primarily five program areas. Our cooperative extension, which entails multiple programs, everything from 4-H to family consumer sciences, horticulture, agronomic support. It also goes to support our poultry research and our poultry diagnostic efforts, which continues to be huge too, because part of two of the state lines that got cuts actually got cut in our poultry diagnostic program area. So again, the council support continues to be of critical importance. A little over $13,000 goes to support specific crop research programs. And why that is so important is, you know, through the transition of modern technology, it got to be where attracting grant monies, unless it was connected to biotech initiatives, was really tough. Of course, the funding at the federal level has made application of grants very tough. But the monies that the council provides allows us to work on specific crop producer problems that may be very isolated to this county. So, you know, again, your money's going to very well spent, you know, uses. And then $10,000 goes to support our cooperative extension safety program initiatives with Mike Love, which I know you all have worked closely with Mike, a wonderful extension safety program. So with that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you may have about any of our extension programs. And again, want to thank you all so much for your continued support. And it's going to continue to be tough because, you know, from the state budget's perspective, it doesn't look real, you know, real peachy for the next year either. So we're all tightening our belts a little tighter. And I will tell you that some of these state budget cuts will definitely impact the what we're going to be able to do out there, because they're significant. It resulted actually in about $180,000 cut specifically to our facility. So that's a big chunk of change, you know, when you look at that, because like I said, those nine state lines, we've got a piece of them. They're like experiment station, state crop extension, state cooperative extension, poultry diagnostic, poultry disease research. So you know, it's pretty significant. So we're gonna continue to, you know, preach our message about the importance of what we're doing out there and being relevant to the county.
Sure.
So with that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you all may have. And
any questions of council?
What happened to our Farm Field Day?
Farm Field Day. That's a great question, Sam. Our Farm Field Day was costing us a little over $20,000 for a half day event. Mm-hmm. And what we did is, instead of expending those monies doing that, we started having twilight meetings, and we broke them out very specific to program area needs. For example, we have a pea twilight meeting, a watermelon twilight meeting, a weed day. So instead of combining them all into one event that was a half a day that had a big price tag to it, that's what we did. And we've gotten actually more bang for our buck, because we've also separated out our Safe Kids Day, which we've been doing in concert with Sussex Technical High School using their grounds, and that's worked out well. So it's been a significant cost savings, and from talking with our clientele, they like it a lot better, you know. Now, I will say that it is a little disadvantage to our, you know, political figures, I will tell you this.
Aren't those the people you're trying to get the money
from? Yes, sir. But I will tell you this. It's funny that you asked this, Sam, because I did have a discussion with the dean, and one of the things that that I've been wanting to do the last couple of years, especially with the change in legislators too, is we're going to try to have an educational dinner that we're going to have at the facility, where we're going to bring everybody up to date about what's happening at the college, the challenges, some of the programs that we're looking at either you know, reducing or expanding. And we are going to do that probably sometime in March. And we're trying to get on the calendar, because we're going to try to get the University of Delaware's president to come down and be a part of that too. So it'd be a great opportunity, you know, for you all. I'm certainly going to be invited, but it'd be a great opportunity for you all to ask some questions about what the college is doing and how we plan on moving forward. But good question.
What are we doing with that fleet of, excuse me, my glass fell off here. What are we doing with that large fleet of pickups that just needs to go out to the farmland? Where do they go?
Do what?
What are we doing with the large fleet of pickups there? I go
by. Oh, the large fleet of pickups?
Yeah, I see at least Must be 20 pickups there, and
yeah,
and they go in, and they don't go no further out to the farmers, do they?
Yeah, we're well, you know, we don't only do just research there. We do research across the state. Our facility supports research projects that are taking place in Middletown, in Kent County. I mean, all over the place. So our researchers from main campus, they'll have projects that will be on different soil types, maybe looking at different bug challenges, you know, different species. Now, I will tell you something that's good about that fleet. We have a gentleman.
When do we start the unwill, right?
Actually, they're free, and you're going to panic on this, but this is a way that we've maximized our budget deal. We are part of the USDA federal surplus. So we have a gentleman on staff, James Atkins, who works through USDA and the federal government. And when these vehicles come up for transfer, we are in the midst of that. So we can get them. You don't have to pay for them. The only thing you got to pay is insurance for them, but you don't have to purchase a vehicle.
That's good.
So that's one of the reasons why you see the increase in fleet. You know, we've been able to get some of the vehicles from USDA, and believe it or not, it's amazing because I mean they're 30,000-40,000 miles. There's nothing wrong with them. They're good looking vehicles, and we've been able to use them instead of using state or federal monies to purchase fleets for vehicle. Now
that's good.
You know, we got to do the maintenance on them, but it's a good deal.
So sure. If you don't ask, you don't know.
That's great.
Absolutely good question.
And the reason I guess I asked know all these questions, I sit under your grandmother, under PAD, see, American democracy. What is the problems with American democracy? And so I got this good education from my grandma.
Miss Leah.
In fact, she lives a couple miles from me, you know.
Now, I'm going to ask you something.
Now, on that farm, you got your own church. So.
That's right. And did you get smacked on your wrist with a yardstick?
No, she told me, says, you're going to do better or you're going to take this course over, and I believed her. And that was my senior year, and I guarantee you, she weren't planning on flunking me because she flunked about four or five boys a year before that, and I knew that was coming. So then I got a 98 in my midterm exam, and she said, something stinks in Denmark here. So she couldn't believe that. but she made a believer on me. I wasn't taking my books home. I never took a book home the whole time I went to school. And she said,
You don't want to preach that.
You're going home. Said you.
Don't have it on recording. Give it to me.
Anyway, that was. Anyway, I had this man, Mom, which graduated.
George, you're doing good.
Your dad, Mom.
I got a bad ear today. I can't hear anything you're
saying. Anything else from council?
The whole side.
I have a question about 4-H program.
Yes, ma'am.
What is the main source of funding for 4-H, and is that also being cut, or what's going on with that?
Well, the main source of funding is from the feds, okay, and it has been stagnant.
So it hasn't been cut?
No, ma'am, but what has happened is they have made grants available. We have our interim extension 4-H program leader, Mark Mano. Now, he's based in Newcastle County. And what he's done a great job in being able to write grants that are kind of targeted at youth at risk and some of the challenges that our kids are facing. So we've been able to attract monies from that source. But the problem is they're limited monies. And one of the things we've been debating with the federal government, you know how that goes, is the fact that they provide monies and they expect the communities that these grants are going into to take ownership and come up with funding for it. And it's just not realistic. Mm-hmm. Because
they want matching funds?
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's challenges in economic times. And so you go into there, into some of these communities and establish some of these programs, and then when the funding dries up, you know, you can't finish the what the intent of the grant was. So we've been trying to educate some of those at the federal level about, you know, trying to sustain some of these programs. Maybe not make so many of them, but let's try to have a little bit longer term funding for some of them to have greater impact.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I think Mr. Wilson's got a check for you.
Oh, that's always good.
That's why he's hanging around here.
Get a box or check.
Yeah,
sir.
We need the circulation.
That's right.
And I'm glad to hear you're getting these free trucks. And if you get one extra one,
send it to the counter, right?
Yes, I do. I have a note here.
Let us know if you got extra trucks, we can use them.
All right.
We won't have to spend so much money, and we can all get ready. Okay. Where's the picture taker?
Get your zoom on that. You don't have to put hand out there.
Watch the flash ricochet off of Todd.
Thank you all. Thank you very much again.
Larry.
You don't drop the check. Thank you very much, Mark, for all you people do out there for the farm community. We appreciate it. Thank you.
It's good entertainment.
Next, Mr. Baker. Mr. Baker, I guess, or Mr. Moore.
Mr. President, September 13th, 11, of this year, there was a discussion concerning withdrawal of an ordinance that had been previously introduced that was brought up just as part of Mr. Baker's administrator's report, and I asked that it be put back on the agenda today, and I would like to read the ordinance, and then we can simply have a motion to withdraw and ratify the action that was taken on September 13th. It's an ordinance to adopt Chapter 97, Adequate Public Facilities, to facilitate the provision of infrastructure relating to stormwater management and drainage, emergency medical services, roads, and schools needed to support new development.
We entertain a motion to withdraw.
I'll make a motion.
I have a motion, Mrs. Deaver.
Second.
Second, Mr. Phillips, to withdraw the ordinance as stated. Any question on the motion?
For the purposes of having a workshop.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Any question on the motion? Now we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Mr. Baker?
Okay. The next item is discussion of an ordinance relating to windmills. We do not have an ordinance prepared on this topic. However, at the September 13th meeting, the council approved an ordinance regarding windmills, and at the meeting, discussion occurred which recommended that the county consider some revisions to the ordinance, but those revisions could not be done without another public hearing. So the council approved the ordinance with the idea that we would come back with some other ideas how to improve it. Mr. Charlie Schmiel from Urban Research and Development Corporation and Land Use Consultants has suggested some changes regarding a couple of questions that did come up regarding allowing more than one windmill on lots of less than 5 acres, and then also providing a maximum number of windmills on lots greater than 5 acres. We have several suggestions. On page 2 of our land use consultant's letter, there are two major suggestions. For lots less than 5 acres, which are used for residential purposes, an alternative to the one windmill, which is now authorized by our ordinance, possibly we could change that to include two or three windmills if the total height is not more than 50 feet. And so this provision would also allow turbines that are either ground-mounted or roof-mounted. And the idea here is that we would enable a small wind turbine to be used, maybe two on a property. We did hear some feedback from one of the windmill companies that indicated they have a smaller product now that they are selling, and you could possibly have two on a residential house. And the other provision is regarding lots over 5 acres, where now we don't really have a limit on the number of windmills that would be allowed on a particular larger lot. So the suggestion was for non-residential uses and for industrial zoning districts, we could limit the maximum number of windmills to a maximum total height of more than 52 feet, and the maximum, there would be a maximum of one such windmill for each 5 acres of lot area, and no more than five windmills would be proposed on a large lot. To have more than that, you could go to the Board of Adjustment to get approval. And the idea was that if someone had a 100-acre parcel and they wanted to put up basically a wind farm, that would require going to the Board of Adjustment to have more than 5 windmills. But if it's a farm with poultry houses and other operations that use electricity, they could still have 5, you know, if it's 25 acres, they could have 5 windmills.
Question.
Phillips.
That state law that was passed almost seemed like it barred us from involving the Board of Adjustments in the past, but in this case, it would not apply.
Right, because the state law, as I understand it, applies to residential uses. So we were, this second part would be more about non-residential and industrial type applications.
So we're saying that industrial uses are a permitted use? There's no conditional use or anything required for anybody doing a commercial venture?
Well, in industrial zone, Mr. Lank, maybe you can answer that better.
If somebody had this 100-acre farm,
right,
can they just do a wind farm without any kind of permitted, without any...
In discussion with Mr. Robertson, it would become a utility. It would be no different than putting up a power plant or something of that nature.
So they would have to come in for a...
Conditional use for a utility.
Conditional use.
Once it goes into that commercial... type of application, as you're saying.
And even if it's in agricultural, if it's going to be an industrial or a wind farm for the purpose of creating an electrical utility, then it goes through the conditional use process, just like a substation
okay.
would.
Okay.
But we had that discussion.
So if somebody had a 100-acre farm, they just can't go out and put a bunch of windmills in it?
No, right.
Okay.
And we could write conditions.
So, but you end up creating a utility.
Well, I understand.
A certain number of wind turbines for the purpose of power and for their own use as a poultry farm, but some poultry farms have anywhere from 6 right. to 10 or more poultry houses.
Well, in I have sense
they may
of...
try to supply their own power. They may be reselling back to the utility, but they're not creating a utility for that purpose.
Right, but I can understand how a sensitive some agricultural areas could be if all of a sudden the fields turn to wind farms and it was permitted without any kind of public hearing process or right. something. So I want to make sure that there is
that would be the way to protect
an opportunity it. For people to voice
the state
support
is,
or
as David
opposition.
Said, for the purpose of really residential, that's where the issue
right.
started.
Right, I understand that.
But we have to, being they put limitation on what can go to the board, we're trying to make sure we've covered all aspects,
okay.
whether it be agriculture, residential, commercial, or industrial.
Okay.
Would there be a limit on the height in this idea of a wind farm? What was the height limit?
52 or something, I hear.
We have separate limits on the ordinance that was approved.
Right, but just
the
this one we're talking
about.
Industrial
zone was like over 200 feet. For a wind farm itself mm-hmm. in an industrial zone, I don't think we have a height limit.
I thought you said something about 52 feet of...
Or those 90, greater than 52.
Greater than 52 feet. Okay, because otherwise I can't see the purpose of trying to...
Oh, and what is the windmill height in the residential district, which is where our probably primary focus was originally? What is permitted there without any...
100 feet for one. Right now, 100 feet. But if we made this change, they could have 2 smaller ones of 50 feet.
Mm-hmm.
2 or 3. Depending on what.
Is that height the top of the blade at its fully extended vertical position, or
the yeah. the okay. way it's set up in definition, you've got basically a tower and some it's and the blade straight up.
Now I see URDC suggested or mentioned 100 feet currently allowed, and then they had originally proposed up to 200 feet. Is any of that incorporated in this proposed ordinance?
There's variations in the ordinance that was adopted from 13 that shows a variation of 100 and then another one for 200. And what happened is the setbacks change.
Setbacks, gotcha.
So it does vary.
So this, what we're talking about today, will allow for windmills on less than 5 acres.
That's the intent. That was the question.
I mean, that's the foundation of this effort, correct?
And most of the conversation that was held with council, it seemed to be, it was rather just one, what number could you have? So we're trying to come up with a number to start and a number that would finish. And if you have a, say it's five or three or whatever, and you get one to exceed that number, you go to the board. So you can still go to the Board of Adjustment and ask for a variance. And so anytime it's a number, you can apply for a variance.
I wouldn't mind shopping this around to some of those folks that originally had spoke to us if we could delay introducing this for 1 week.
Sure.
I'm interested in something.
We don't have an ordinance to introduce.
This is just a,
I saw on the agenda it said impossible introduction of ordinance. Okay.
And if we're serious about a utility, I mean, a wind farm, I don't know how a lender is going to, you know, lend money on something that has a conditional use. It's sometimes difficult. So I don't know. That's something to look at, too.
I haven't seen many problems with the lenders on conditional uses for the substation or the sanitary treatment facility, those types. It's the other, the little ones. The small business that's going to conditional use, they have a little problem with those.
Okay.
I don't think
They're likely to be able to get their financing to put that.
You would think so.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Good.
It hasn't seemed to be a problem with those. Okay. It's the small businesses.
Any more questions, Mr. Lank or Mr. Baker?
I guess it would be helpful for me if a draft ordinance was created, a little bit more meat that we could offer to these folks who have a direct interest in it.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, we could. Can you work on a draft ordinance? Based on what we've talked about today.
Okay. If you can work on that, maybe could you bring that maybe back next week?
Yes.
Is that possible?
Put on
the agenda for next week, bring that back to the proposed draft, and then the council can certainly have input then and or invite other people to participate that want to have weigh in on this thing.
There are several housekeeping type items that are included in Mr. Driscoll's or Mr. Schmiel's letter that maybe we could also address.
Sure. Right. Yeah, let's try to do that off again. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. We can use italics or highlight to show what the changes are. Use the existing ordinance that you just adopted and add in the features that are being suggested.
Okay.
That'd be easier to reread it that way.
That'd be fine. Thank you very much. Mr. Baker?
The next item is early retirement report. And on July 26, the County Council approved a limited early retirement offer for employees in certain departments. This, again, was a voluntary offer for eligible employees. These departments were selected based on the reduction in workload and or demand of services as a result of the economy. Eligible participants will receive 3 years of service for the purpose of calculation of pension benefits. Seven employees elected to take the offer. This includes four general fund funded employees and three water and sewer employees. The annual savings is estimated to be $110,000 a year for the general fund and $68,000 per year for sewer and water districts, totaling $178,000 per year. So the estimated savings over 3 years is about $534,000. Again, the goal was that positions for some retiring employees would not need to be replaced. An ERO, which results in a reduction in the number of positions, typically produces savings for the county. If the position needs to be replaced, even at a lower salary, there normally is not a cost savings because additional monies have to be contributed to our pension fund to pay for early retirement. So there's no action really required today,
right.
But we just wanted to provide that report.
Sure.
To you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you.
The next item is the administrator's report. First, we have Wings and Wheels. The fourth annual Wings and Wheels Festival will be held at the county airport on October 1st from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. A large crowd is expected, as last year over 7,500 attended. The event includes a car show, vintage planes, fly-in, food, crafts, World War II reenactments, and World War II testimonials. On Friday night, September 30, a stage door canteen will be held with a salute to 1940s music, and we have attached information, and the festival is sponsored by the Greater Georgetown Chamber of Commerce and supported by Mr. Hicken and county staff at our airport. as well as the county council also supports that. This 2011 Delaware Chapter National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials Award. We are pleased to announce that Mr. William LaCates was awarded the 2011 Delaware Chapter of the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials Award, which is an annual award. Mr. LaCates, who has worked over 32 years for the county, has been dedicated to providing affordable housing for Sussex County residents and improving housing for low to moderate income citizens. We appreciate all the work Mr. LaCates has done, his tireless efforts for the county, and this is a copy of the award that he received. This is the award he received. Very impressive, with a silver cup with his name on it.
Very nice.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Bold, not a cup.
And you have done a great job for this county. We appreciate it very much. Thank you for all you've done.
Yes, indeed.
This is his World Series trophy. Sussex County Community Emergency Response Team training, as per the attached press release, we are encouraging local interested residents to contact Mr. Carl Davis with the Sussex County Citizen Corps who are interested in assisting with emergency response. Last spring, the county held a two-day session at the EOC. Mr. Davis, a county paramedic, has volunteered his time to assist with this function to help during emergencies.
I have a question. As far as getting the word out to local communities and whatnot about this, trying to find maybe somebody who would want to volunteer, do we have what kind of system do we have to reach homeowner associations? Do we have any kind of list, mailing list or anything like that?
We have sent, Mr. Guy worked on a press release, which I think is attached
in the press.
Here.
We have, and it's on the website.
We have not contacted
all that.
Individual organizations okay. like that, which we could do. We could contact the ones that, if you have any in particular, we'd be glad to
contact
them.
I know I had a question from Milton that they were talking about where would the shelters be and could we have, you know, I had some questions and I'll refer that to Mr. Guy in the future.
Okay.
I had a question about that from Milton.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Okay. The next item is the Red Cross soliciting volunteers. American Red Cross, as per the attached news release, is requesting assistance from volunteers to also help with emergency, especially in shelters throughout our county. Volunteer orientation will be held at the Cordry Center near Millsboro from 6 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, September 28th. And again, we encourage volunteers to contact the Red Cross as per the attached news release. The Sussex County Airport Advisory Committee will be meeting September 28th at 6 p.m. as per the attached agenda. Various items are noted on the agenda, including an update on Wings and Wheels Festival, as well as a review of airport policies, and this meeting is held at the EOC. Sussex County Business Meeting, yesterday, September 26th, from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m., CDAC, the Sussex Economic Development Action Committee, sponsored a program to help prospective businesses in our county. Attached is a copy of information regarding the various agencies that were represented at this function. Currently, these free business development consultations will be held on the fourth Monday of each month. The initial meeting was successful with a variety of residents attending to attain information regarding how to develop and expand business in the county, and the information was available in one place at our West Complex. Thank you.
Were we successful in that meeting? Did we have
Yes, we did have a number of people come and sit down and meet with the various groups that were there to help small business.
What I meant to say, did we have anybody really interested in coming here through this organization, through this meeting?
I can't okay. fully answer that, as there may be, hopefully some of the people that did attend will move ahead with new businesses in Sussex County.
But what we're doing is at least making the effort to assist them, I mean, is what
yes.
the bottom line
yes.
is. Okay.
Yes.
Any questions, Mr. Baker? Mr. William LaCates, Director of Community Development and